These people are confused. This needs love got stronger. Do I let God or do I let me? We call it Street Jesus.
Live from the Pathway Studios in Johnston proper, you are Live from the Path.
Welcome to Live from the Pack.
We will never be legitimate.
Jeez. It takes the fun out of it, man. We're authentic.
All right. I don't even know what to say to your life. You're listening to Live from the Path. I don't know. Get a girlfriend. I don't know what to tell you. All right.
Get a lady.
Well, you're listening to Live from the Path. Good luck.
All right. Here's what we got going on the show tonight. First of all, our show is about honest faith, fierce grace, and donkeys. And basically what it's going to sound like to you is there's a bunch of dudes in a room jaw-jacking around about Jesus, and you've pegged it precisely. That is exactly what's going on. We simply show up late, we turn the cameras on, and we throw on the mics, and we say, what you want to talk about Jesus? And that's pretty much what goes on here. And goldfish noises or whatever before the show starts. What was going on?
Seriously, you don't want to know.
Okay, no, that's fair. I think that's fair.
All right, stop it there.
Here's what we got going on the show tonight. I've got some Pope style, and this is holdover Pope style from last week.
Well, you promised you were going to mill this about, and you did indeed mill it.
I did. I milled it about, and I think I'm ready to present. I'm still hesitant as advice, though, but it's something I'd like to talk over. I think it's going to be Pope style, and then you're going to walk away and think, hey, man, maybe that guy's not really the Pope. I'll give that, and we'll see. It's a potentially questionable Pope style advice this week from Ben. Also, we got a few articles we want to hit. One of them was, what not to say to someone who has been hurt by church? 6 misguided responses to spiritual abuse. So we're going to talk through that. I mean, and I suppose you hear that that makes a lot of play in the news, either mainstream or Christian-oriented, is church abuses. The question is like, you know, if we're running into that, whether you would agree with it or not, like, what's the best response? And frankly, what can we learn as a church from that, from what people have encountered? So we'll talk about that. Also, there was an article about a guy who said, basically, it's a question of the nature of church itself. Dinner with friends is my church. Is that okay? Examining what church really is. And I think that's an interesting question, given how kind of the life of the church has buoyed from, you know, pretty, I don't know, its early beginnings in the first and second centuries into kind of a mass organization, and then random bits of splitting and hitting the countryside in the interim. So that'll be kind of an interesting conversation, too. Mike, we got Dear Life in the Path?
We do.
Do you have a
synopsis withheld?
all right, cool. Also, hey, if you haven't had a chance to, go hook up with livefromthepath.org and check out our interview with Stevie Sides. Stevie was in the studio last week, and I don't know, just a very interesting interview. His album The Witness Stand is out. He's working on The Witness Stand too, and basically he embraces the conversation that says, look, there's things that I think we mutter in Christian corners. But don't talk about openly as if there's any volition behind what God's got going on in our lives. And so that's kind of what I took from understanding what he's after with the witness stand. It's kind of engaging culturally in a way that says, look, we're not afraid of how God does things. And so anyway, go check out that. Go check out his album. And we're going to have him in sometime probably later in the year to kind of see where he's at with the witness stand too and hook up with him even more. So go check out that video. Hey, unfortunately, if you saw the live show, I guess if you missed it either, well, our show kind of got cut short last week. We did a full hour 20 or so on the live program, but what was able to be archived on our YouTube stream is only like 37 minutes long. So there was some stuff that we said we were going to talk about, and I promise we did. We just didn't retain it.
Yeah.
We can't prove any of that stuff. So, and here's the deal. If you've listened to the show to any length of time, you're not going to miss a random 40 minutes of it. Like, it's the same thing.
It's a drop in the bucket.
Yeah. Just go watch a past show and be disappointed in that. There's no reason to keep current on that type of thing. All right, so that's what we're got going on in the show this week. Let's hit up one of these articles and then maybe see if I can get away with my Pope style. So I want to talk about this dinner with friends is my church.
I like this one.
Is that okay? So here's the salvo. It's an advice. It's an advice column. Hey, Eddie. Without going into all the backstory, I'll just tell you that I feel... Let's rephrase. Dear Life from the Path.
Yeah.
Without going into all the backstory, I'll just tell you that I feel like God is moving me to be in a different kind of church. Specifically, one that has more of a home-church kind of vibe. So, is it okay for me to have church in my home? I feel like I experience God better at dinner with my friends. Thanks, man. Love, Mark.
That's it?
That's the question.
Yeah.
Mike's in with, that's okay.
Yeah.
I think it really depends on the motivation. I have no problem with the church meeting in home. Are they running from accountability? Are they running from fellowship? Are they running from something? Or are they just, is that just...
Do you assume they're running because they don't want to attend the commercialized church?
No, that's what I'm asking. I mean, if I'm okay with a house church.
But they must answer to you on why they're not coming.
No. What often happens in the house church movement is they leave for all these reasons, and then they do the same thing just in a smaller way. And then they end up going back to.
It's kind of hard church. not to volunteer to vacuum or be in the nursery when there's only like three guys at your place.
Hey, I mean, they become.
Steve isn't helping.
They become just as inward, maybe even more so sometimes. I can't. It can become unhealthy, or it can be really healthy. That's what I'm just asking.
I mean, it's the same. I think if I understand what you're saying, Dan, it's the same premise as a guy who says humanity's in the tank, or I'm going to go live in the forest. Yeah, you might have avoided the problems that you thought humanity was causing, but like you're also living in the forest by yourself, and you're also not engaging with anybody. So like, if you're there are healthy ways to do church at any level. If you're home churching because you're saying because you're running from something that otherwise comes along with the Christian community, and you're simply trying to reduce your exposure in that way. Like the question is, are you being faithful to Jesus in that thing? As opposed to hiding away from something else. Is that kind of what you're getting at?
Yeah.
I mean, why do people who, like generally, as far as I can see, people who do a home church or something small like that are different than the corporate normal, building style worship are kind of, they're considered fringe or, even missionaries to some extent. Like, they're just not part of the normal Christian fish stream. Is that even necessary? Like, or it's just fine? You know what I'm saying? Like, is there a reason that they're thought of so differently? Like, is there parts of the Bible that they're taking some way and corporate the other way, and that's how they ended up where they're at? Or
I don't think there's anything implicitly wrong with it with any size, to be honest with you. Like, there's risks that come with both. That's probably the right way to think about it. There's, if you got a giant church with 5,000 people, I'm glad you're reaching people for Jesus. You have some risks there on making community, people feeling attached. Like, that's one of the inherent risks in that. It doesn't mean that every church that big has that problem, but it's created in that atmosphere. I think if you end up doing a house church focused to simply say, I don't want to be part of a larger community. Like, there's a risk there that God has you doing something that actually has a wider breadth that you're simply not embracing. So, I mean, I think there's risks in both of those things, but I think I would come from a position where I say, I don't know that either one is inherently wrong until you're otherwise choosing something that prioritizing your comfort over God's calling in one scenario or the other.
Whether you're in a big building of 5,000 people or a small home of 15 people, 10 people, if you're a community that acknowledges and loves Christ for who he is, seeks him and follows him, serves him, and then you're doing your work, because, I mean, regardless of how many people you have in your church or your building or your community, you've got work to do. Do it. If you're doing those things, I don't see a problem. Like you guys have said, there's risks in both. There's risks in the megachurch, and there's risks in the small 100 to 500, and then there's risks to the home church of less than 10 people. I think it's ultimately where your heart is, and as long as you're aligned with what God's asking the church to be, and what God is asking of the church, and who the church is, not just the building, I think you could find yourself in the right.
I think where we've gone astray in our culture is we have redefined church, the church being the body of Christ. When you look at the first century church, they met in homes, they met in larger groups, they met in mid-sized, they did it all. It was all just the church. It wasn't like, well, this is First Dan's church, and over there is Second and Third whatever church.
Right.
We put labels on it, and we've divided ourselves. And it's all, I would say all of that is an error when we're all just part of the body of Christ. So I'd say, hey, worship in your home, but also connect with a larger group in the whole fellowship of believers within the community at large, not the church community, the town that you're in. And we miss that. If you're just hiding, that's a sign of danger. And you're missing out of some great blessing. I talked to our worship pastor today, who's in the middle of a crisis in their family, and the community of believers is surrounding them right now in some pretty positive ways. If your community of believers is like five people, that's great, but it's not nearly the blessing that and encouragement and uplift that you need at times from a larger group.
Can't you get that from a smaller group, though? I mean, I get that the magnitude could be more if you have 100 people versus 5 people, but isn't God the one who's blessing through those people? I mean, I think that it could happen with less than 10, too.
It can, yeah. I guess I'm not saying it's one or the other. It's really can kind of and both. It's we need. I would feel more comfortable to stop defining this as... I mean, this is my church.
Right.
It's like, I am the church, and this is where I'm meeting today, and I'm also part of this, you know... We need to kind of widen our horizons, break down the boundaries a little bit.
I agree.
Okay. Any other thoughts on that?
Sounds like there's advantages to both styles. Go with where the Lord's leading you. Just make sure that you're not running away from anything, and you should be good.
Yeah. And as you can hide in either one, right? Like you can hide in five grand. You can hide in five because you're hiding from the other 100.
You're hiding from the right. 5 grand.
Yeah. So, I mean, and you know, that's the thing. And we've kind of talked about this on the show before. Is like there's part of me that likes the idea of living in some sort of weird shack out 50 miles or 100 miles from the nearest bird. But the truth is that, like, that's not God's work. God's work is not me living in a shack away from birds. Like, it's simply around people. And so the level of influence you have is simply the question is where does God have you? He could have you in a yurt around 10 guys for 20 years. And if that's where he's got you, thumbs up, man. If he's got you in a larger platform, hold your breath and dive in. It's more about an obedience thing than about a picture or fulfilling an expectation that we said God has it has to be this way. Because, you know, if you were to walk in on a first century church somewhere around AD 65, you're going to see a random smattering of how people are getting together and in sizes of groups and where and that type of thing. So,
hey, our little group we have here around the radio studio is church for me. I mean, I thoroughly enjoy this. I consider this part of my worship experience and church.
Yeah, and I suppose that even the necessity of the question is based upon church as an event. Mm-hmm. As opposed to a community of believers getting together, studying, talking about Jesus, that kind of thing, right? And so, like, we ask these types of questions because we're like, does my event qualify? And, like, I suppose the premise of the question is the wrong thing that we're considering, right? All right, you want to hear, like, it's not really the secular answer, the relevant answer. He says, I applaud you for asking this question. I really do. Because while we're clearly going to get into a lengthy talk, I'm not going to read a lengthy talk about what the church is and isn't. I don't want to ignore the fact that at every turn in your inquiry, you're doing your best to be the man God has designed you to be, and that matters. I'm proud of you for still seeking community.
I didn't notice that there was any type of striving. Seemed like a pretty basic question.
Yeah, you might.
I don't really want to get up
really
on Sundays.
He's propping this thing up.
let's see. Now let's talk about your church or the holy dinner party. Question one: are you eating good food at this party? If not, please quit this sacrilege and return to wherever you came from. However, if you are eating wonderful breads and cheeses and wine and sweet bites, you may continue to the next paragraph.
Does it really say that?
Yeah.
It does.
That's what it said. The guy's got a great sense of humor.
I was going to say, I'm taking that as sarcasm.
Okay. And for this portion of the conversation, I'm bringing in a big gun, namely Chad Turnbull, who is the director of distributing the church at Northland. A church distributed. Chad's role, and really his wild-eyed calling, is leading a wonderful... This seems like all bogus. Hold on. Let's get to his main question. He basically wants to know if it's okay that we have church around a dinner table instead of coming to church on Sunday. What say you? I say that the question, while a very good and thoughtful question, is respectfully operating under the wrong paradigm. Mark and really a lot of us think of churches as buildings as locations, but I want us to move to the center of gravity from what it means to be the church outside of a building and to an identity and a community. Church is not a place, semicolon. Church is something that has to be rooted in relationship and common purpose. What is the church's purpose? It is a place that equips the works of saints to the work of ministry, and it's a place that allows us to worship, glorify, and celebrate the glory of God. We see this in Acts 2, in the temple courts as well as in Ephesians and all throughout the scripture. The church isn't for you, it is you. The church, you, are God's plan for the world, and if the center of gravity is on relationship and common purpose, not holding tightly to the where I go to church card, it changes how you live. It changes how you do your job, raise kids, and interact with someone at a grocery store, because in all those places, you are at church. So, bolded question. So, because Mark's location doesn't define his church, what would you affirm and caution about his dinner party gatherings? First, I think it's really great that Mark is having a smaller personal group of people to live as the church and to reflect the image of God together. I think that can be an extremely effective vehicle for proclaiming the gospel together. Additionally, as they think through how they can best be the church, they must come back to who God is. This little phrase puts it well. I am equals us for them there. Do you see what I'm saying?
Okay, you lost me at that point.
Yeah.
This little phrase puts it well. I am equals us for them there. Yeah, no, that's quaint and untangible. Do you see what I'm saying?
No.
No, you're not, sir.
Nobody,
he'll describe
I'll buy the T-shirt, though.
Dummy version, sir. Nobody can reflect the image of God in isolation. It's impossible. We can't live that out alone because God's nature is relationship. Boy, what does that say for Tom Hanks? He was cast away on that island.
He had a ball, didn't he?
Does that
soccer
count?
Ball or something?
Is that church? Is
they
that
had a face
a
on
relationship
it.
With
basically,
Wilson?
Basically, he can't know God in that circumstance. He doesn't have any friends. And on a more practical level, Tom Hanks, we can't live life alone because it robs us of the opportunity to use our gifts in a community that is proclaiming the gospel. For example, someone who's gifted in the area of hospitality, you're right, that's awkward.
Can't well, come on, you pick the one gift that you have to have someone else around for.
I serve other people. There's no other people. Well, shucks.
Looks like I'm useless.
But I will make myself happy.
I can't live in this community. I'm going to give me a present. Oh, me.
You're wonderful. I'd love to encourage you.
You've outdone yourself, myself.
Yeah, but how do you give, teach, pray, or, well, obviously you can pray on your own, but preach. It, all these are communal-oriented gifts.
Yeah,
Most of the gifts are something that require a giver and a receiver. So,
does a mirror count?
A mirror?
Probably not. It's like he's like a man.
That's the most vain thing you could possibly do. Try and hand over some money to your mirror.
I exhorted him, and he was gracious.
You're looking wonderful today, mate.
Thank you.
As far as cautions go, I'd warn them against staying too connected and becoming isolated from people outside their group, believers and non-believers. This defeats any definition you may use for church. Also, too much denim is bad news. Finally, I'd say I threw that in for good measure. It's a homeschool caution and a church caution as well. Finally, I'd say to Mark that it's great that he feels closer to God when he's having dinner with friends, but feeling closer, well, that's not the point of your life. If it was all about feeling closer to God, you would have just gone to heaven the moment you became a Christian so that you could be right next to him all the time. It comes back to the reality that God's plan is communities of people, serving Jesus and transforming the world. You can't change the world alone, but in a group, you can do significant things as there's real power as your gifts find full expression in that collective. Unless, of course, you're Tom Hanks on that island, and then you just can't contribute anything positive to the Christian walk. Right. He's got another 10 paragraphs.
I like what he was saying about you are the church. So if you're at the grocery store, guess what? You are the church right there. It really changes the paradigm from events and locations and
Go ahead.
That's very true, but don't make it weird for everybody at the grocery store. Don't like stand in the front and go, "Welcome to church, everybody. I'm glad you've come. We have lettuce. We have lettuce over there. Communion is a little bit different.
He's in the wine aisle. Get him.
You have to grab the grape juice. I'm just saying, you're going to be that creepy dude. Which is like, hey, man,
wine and crackers were free.
Welcome to the Church of Panera.
Actually, that's probably the best caution. Like, while in theory, I really do enjoy the small group home church vibe, but like it is true, like if you really love that vibe, then you know it's not the place for you, because then you won't invite anybody to it. You know what I'm saying? Like if you love the small group small church home church deal, and you meet people that need to be a part of it, and you don't want to invite them because you don't want your community to get any bigger, then that's not a place for you. You're in there for the wrong reason.
Man, your church growth percentage would make a lot of sense if you can say, hey man, we had 4 people, now we have 5. We increased 20% of our church this year.
Tithing is down though, Bob.
Yeah, I guess we know who didn't tithe this time.
I used some of the tithe money to buy this whiteboard so I can tell you that you're not tithing very well.
The church office, aka my living room.
I put all the non-tithers will have their names on the refrigerator.
Are you on the sticky note?
How do you spell Morris? Morris, how do you spell that?
Hey, you know, I kind of like this concept of the church. Now with free delivery. I feel like that is the right banner of which we should be functioning.
Let's go have church at a grocery store this week, guys.
Yeah, we do house calls. We also might drop by the Spaghetti Works.
The church of us, we do house calls.
All right. So here's the deal. Yeah, that's fine. Go with Jesus. Like, do what Jesus has you doing. He might have you in that yurt. That's fine. But don't run. I'm like, here's the deal. I feel like I'd be very uncomfortable in a church that's got like, that requires more than 3 digits to count it. And even then, it's probably pushing it for me. However, I have to be open to the fact that there might be something God has going on that I could be open to there. So anyway, I suppose just Just keep an eye open. Keep your knees down. See what God's got in your life.
Did you just say you're uncomfortable in churches over 100?
No, I know that require more than three digits. So it'd be 1,000 or above.
Tower.
Yeah.
999, okay. You're good. Once Jerry walks in, I'm out.
It's really awkward to not know people in your community who have literally been there for a year. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think I had someone greet me at church last week, but like, are you new here? Like, I've been here for 5 years.
Mike, I just forget your face sometimes. I mean, okay, I'm sorry.
I'm here all the time.
Who are you?
I've been here, since day one.
Actually. I mean, I try to be kind of gracious about it, but like, no, I've been here for a while. Maybe we just haven't met, you know? And I'm like, it's not like I have a giant ego that I think people should know me. But
don't
like,
you know who I am?
I literally walk here every Sunday. I'm all over the place, you know?
No, that's, Mike's like, you're on the stage 2 weeks out of four at least.
Here's the deal. It was kind of a shot to my humbleness. I'm like, wow, people don't even notice that you're up there. I'm like, worship is going well then. You know what I'm saying? They should literally not know who's playing the instruments and be focusing on Jesus. I'm like, you know what? I'm very happy about this and also slightly disappointed. Hey,
that's why God doesn't let me play instruments.
So this Sunday, like Dave was preaching, and like the band, you know how the band goes up when there's like a few minutes left as like, you know, the sermon hook. And so I started to walk up there, and I stopped because I thought, like, where I was sitting, I was playing the cajon this week, and where I was sitting, you play the cajon, like, you got to have your head down most of the time, and I thought, my bald head is going to be a distraction from Dave's sermon, because I'm up close to the front of the stage, and my bald head will shine. I thought, I'm going to hang back.
It was a good move. It was.
You're welcome, Eric.
Thank you.
All right, that's it. All right, here we go. Pope-style advice. It feels wrong to introduce myself. Someone introduce me.
Okay, so this is the premise of Pope-style advice. So what has happened is some local hooligans have told a bunch of people that Ben is actually the Pope. So a couple hundred people have showed up at Ben's doorstep and have said, hey, you know, we're here for advice. We need some life-changing stuff that's going to be relevant to us and relevant to his life, and we're not going to get off his lawn until he gives us this this nugget of Pope wisdom. So Ben is about to give us some Pope-style advice that relates to his life to get a couple hundred people off his lawn. Go ahead, Ben.
Okay, so Pope-style advice, with minor bits of hesitance, I'm going to say you really need to drop your expectations. Like, lose expectations. Specifically, when it comes to looking for how God is doing things in your life. And here's how I got here, is that, like, a lot of times when we have frustration with what's going on in life, with the things that have happened, and we've petitioned God, or we expected him to intervene in some way, and then if it doesn't happen that way, our natural reaction is like, God, I'm kind of upset about this, right? Like, this isn't go the way I thought it would. And I think that's a natural reaction, right? Like, if we seek and knock and we're asking and it doesn't go the way we expect it to, and then we're like, now what am I supposed to think? God didn't do kind of what I was expecting him to do. But the question here, and this is where this came from, is like, look at the Pharisees, right? You had a circumstance in which the Pharisees believed God's promises. God said, this is what's going to happen, right? There's going to be a Messiah. You're going to see these things happen. And the Pharisees believed that. They trusted God that those things would happen. But they assumed, they had this thought that this was the certain way of which God was going to act. And when they got caught up in that, they literally missed Jesus right in front of them, right? Believed God, assumed he would do what he would do, but because you thought it was going to happen in a specific way and it wasn't happening that way, you miss Jesus. And so I wonder if we're running into that in some of the things that go on in our lives. We say, God, this is what I'm petitioning you for. And then we have an idea of how we think God is going to solve this problem or change this situation. And when he doesn't do it the way that we expect or in the timing that we expect, we get frustrated. We think maybe I don't have enough faith. Maybe God is not faithful. Maybe God is not who he says he is. Maybe he is a mean God. And like these weird things call God's character into question. But the truth is that the only realistic thing that I can rely on and expect is God will be faithful to his character. That is the truth. But the ways in which that character plays itself out, the ways in which it intervenes in the world, I feel like a lot of kind of our issues that we run into in understanding God and his interaction in the world is because we assumed that we thought of the best way for God to intervene and that he would do that. And so I guess my advice is that be careful that, like, you didn't set expectations on God of which of which you thought, here's how God will do it. Because the truth is that when you came up with that, like what you came up with was something that your mind was capable of coming up with that is limited to your perspective and your ability to see the world from your own chair, of which God has a much broader and higher perspective. And so I think to a certain extent, we need to be trust in his character and expect that it is a completely reasonable expectation to hold God to his character. He will be who he is. But anything beyond that, I think we run risks of not only like putting ourselves in a position to be on the other side of what God is doing, but also not of missing Jesus, like saying this is how God is going to act. And when he doesn't act the way that we are, we actually might miss Jesus acting in our circumstance because we weren't looking for him just to act. We were looking for him to act in the way that we expected him to. And so I think we got to drop, I think you got to lose your expectations a little bit. And here's where my hesitancy is in this. Because now, if that is the case, and I feel pretty confident that it is, it then calls into question, so what am I, how am I praying? What am I, like, if I'm asking for God for something to do specifically, should I not keep an eye out for that? And what does that mean between how we kind of interact and petition God, and then what we can expect for God to react? Because the truth is that he will act in his character, and I just want to see it. I just want to be able to see what it is, whether he does it the way I wanted to or does it something else completely different way or doesn't even do anything. Can I see him in that? I think that's the lofty thing, the thing that I want to do. But I don't know. It starts to kind of mess with some of my, I think, my previous understandings of prayer. So that is my advice. And I guess I'm telling you to get off my lawn and handle it prayerfully. But with the caveat that I'm still kind of, even in response, praying through that on what that means for my relationship with God and how I pray and how he interacts with the world and what I'm petitioning for and what I should look for and encourage other people to do. That's my Pope, my, I don't know, half-witted Pope style advice for the night.
So I would ask, and I would ask the question, if you had to state, and this is going to be hard to sum up, right? Because I get what you're saying when you're saying, like, God will be true to his character. Like, I can say that God is just. You just don't know in which way he is just, right? He holds all the cards. I hold one. And so some things don't look just to me, but in turn are just, you know, either way. But, like, what is God's goal with his interaction with his people? All of his people.
To build trust.
Okay.
He wants us to trust him.
So, like, is that a character of God that I can fall back on? Like, because, like, I wouldn't know, how do I know it's him? You know what I'm saying? Like, because I can attribute a lot of things to his character because I'm only holding one card. And so if I only see one card, like, based on that fact, which I don't think that I disagree with you, but I'm just trying to figure out, how do I figure out if God is interacting in my life? If I see, you know, a bad thing happen, I can attribute it to God and say, look, he holds all the cards. He's obviously doing the right thing. And then a great thing happens, and I'm like, he holds all the cards. He's probably obviously doing the right thing. But how would I ever know whether it really is him? Or it's just something.
So, and again, this is, I think, my reaction to that would be, that's kind of a faithful in the means, God handles the ends, right? Like, are my ends, do I need to be invested in those ends? But it brings up the same question. The thing I think you're getting at is the thing where my hesitancy lies, which is, if God wants to build trust with his people, and we never have an appropriate, we never have a guidepost, a reaction point to see that that's the case. And maybe that gets to what I was getting at, which is, maybe my prayer more so is like, God, help me. Here's what I want. Here's what I'm petitioning you for. Regardless of what happens, can I help me to see you in it so that that trust is built, right? So that I understand, I can see your hand. And I may not understand the big picture. The kids and I have been reading Uncle Tom's Cabin. Well, my oldest, and have been reading Uncle Tom's Cabin. And it doesn't really matter, I guess, how familiar you are with the book. But, like, basically you see kind of the consistent thing demonstrated that happened in Jesus's life, and it happens in the lives of kind of this main character, Tom, of which the way that he acts is foolishness to the world, right? But it is perfect trust that God will handle these things, and his faithfulness and the means ultimately produce the ends that you would have expected, right? The influence on people. The man in the lowest position in life has the ability to influence someone to the highest possible outcome of life, which is to know Jesus. And so it's one of those things where, like, you can't, the big picture is this man suffers and ultimately dies at the hands of a very cruel man. But in the perspective of heaven, There are I mean, dozens of people, if not hundreds, that will ultimately be influenced for the kingdom because of the life that that guy lived. And he will never see that same perspective that otherwise God has. And you could look from an outsider and say, how could God let such a cruel thing happen? Or how can God let this thing happen to these people or this circumstance? It's just, it's not fair. It's not right. And in a grander scale, though, like, I will never be able to have God's perspective unless he shares it with me. And so can I trust that his perspective is greater? And so even though a righteous and faithful man died, what and from a worldly perspective, I would say unnecessarily, like that's the case of the cross, right? But which accomplished a thing that has had such a revolutionary impact on the people around him, and in Jesus' case, the world, like no one else besides Jesus would have been able to be afforded that same glimpse, but God's perspective otherwise saw that and it happened anyway. Can I just trust in that? Can I just trust that his character is faithful, even the things that I don't understand?
It would be a lot easier to trust in a God who is just dumber, quite frankly. If he was just a genie in a magic lamp, you just throw up your prayer and your wish at him, and then he does it. That's real easy to trust in. It'd be much more mechanical. It'd be like a machine at that point, with all the limited wisdom of a toaster. But he's more than just that, and thankfully he is. And so he's not just going to be a yes to every prayer that we throw at him. And that's when it starts getting really a lot more complicated, because now he's not a reflection of my will. Instead, I'm learning how to be a reflection of his will, and that requires him building trust in me, which isn't just an automatic yes to everything that I say, and it's not an automatic no either. It's him guiding me and being gentle with me, and when he needs to be gentle, and being firm when he needs to be firm. It's more the relationship of a father to a son than it is of a person to a machine. And a lot of times, just in our ignorance, we'll come to God with an idea about how we think he should be acting, and obviously he's going to disappoint because he's not a God in our image. He's himself. And how we respond to that is very telling, because we can either come away disappointed saying, well, you're apparently not a God who's a reflection of my will, and then we walk away because he's now disappointed us. Well, that's because he's even greater. We need to lift our eyes up. We need to understand that he's bigger. His perspective is larger. He has more wisdom that he brings to the table.
But how would someone who doesn't know God know that? You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. That's kind of where I find the caveat. I don't say that I disagree, but like, yep. how do you tell someone to trust a God that they don't know with no interaction to prove that the trust is even, you know, worth it or available? Right? The machine. That's the reason I trust my toaster. Right? I put toast in. I push the button, and it puts toast out. Right, like every single time I ask it, it just keeps on doing it. And like, I don't know that that's a. I love this toaster because it works for me and does my bidding. I just like it because it's dependable. And like as your interactions with God go, and you know, when you suggest that maybe that you lose some of your expectation of how God is going to handle something, I think I agree with that. His sovereignty kind of covers that. But like, if I can't expect anything from him. Or to tell whether it came from, I don't know how I can legitimately say that I trust that. Because basically what would end up happening is, and if I'm being real honest here, what would end up, I would live an entire life hoping that I was trusting God, but not really knowing him at all, because I know I should trust him and not question him, and I don't know, I guess I don't know him. I don't know whether to expect something from him. I don't know whether I actually did something.
Yeah.
And like the only Bible verse that comes to my head when I was trying to think through this was, the sheep know my voice, right? To know whether something's coming from God or not. But like, I know that I sit on that fence sometimes where I'm like, I don't know what you're doing. And I really don't care if you go this way or go that way. I just want to know it's you. I just want to know it's you that's pushing the button.
Yeah. You need a trusted mediator. It's something like you're talking about toast in a toaster. My parents have a machine. It's a Blu-ray player, and they just, It boggles them. They can't figure it out. It still flashes 12 o'clock or something. and so they need me to come along and kind of show them just how some of the buttons work and how to get Netflix on it and some of these things. And once I've shown them how they can interact with this a little bit better and use it for what it's what it's intended to. Now they're getting more out of the machine. They're essentially their relationship with this machine is no longer something that's so baffling to them. They can understand it better. And that's just me to a machine. It works as well for person to person. The way that I usually will build trust with another person is getting to know them. I'm able to talk with them. But I'm an introvert. I don't like going out and just meeting strangers out of nowhere. I like having someone that I already trust introduce me to someone that they trust. And them pointing to them and saying, hey, this is a trustworthy person. And then I'm more than willing to start building that trust, having someone kind of help mediate that relationship, because as we build and we become vulnerable with our trust, some of those expectations go unmet, and relationships require maintenance, and especially in Middle Eastern culture, you have to have someone in between that you both trust who can help to keep the maintenance going on that relationship, someone that you can both go to and say, hey, something's going on really weird here. Can you tell me a little bit about this person and how, you know, what's going on with this? Just someone who could stand there in between and say, here's what I see going on. Why don't you guys try communicating a little bit differently? Maybe you're approaching each other with just the wrong sort of expectations. And what's really cool is that's exactly what Jesus is. He's someone who, he was a human being and he was God. And so he came and he met these 12 guys and introduced himself. And now all of a sudden these 12 guys know him and trust him. And so now God's in this trusting relationship with humanity because of a mediator, a trusted mediator. And then those guys introduced everyone that they knew to God. And they introduced everyone that they knew as well. And so someone who knows God ends up trusting him and then going to their friends and saying, hey, I trust God. Why don't you trust him too? And let me help you along in that.
Right. That's the whole notion of discipleship, right? Is like coming to know God from somebody that already knows him. Mm-hmm. And so between the witness of other people and scripture, like maybe that's the way that we get to know God. And one of the things I thought about when you were talking is I think sometimes, and I'm struggling with this, I think in my own life, I'm trying to understand how what this changes about my life. But like, I think we end up in a spot where we may not see God because the things that we're asking don't require him, right? Like we seek to see God's hands in things that we are capable of accomplishing on our own. I could get this job on my own skills, under my own volition. I could accomplish X, Y, Z. Like if we're not in the habit of asking things that require God's hand, then it probably diminishes the amount of time that we'll actually see it. We're actually a lot of times we're just asking to endorse human level things, and not asking him to actually involve himself. And where I'm struggling is like, I'm not sure what that looks like, because I think that's what I always do. I think I traditionally have said, you know, help me figure out how to do X, Y, and Z. How can I solve a human level problem with the human intellect? Give me the wisdom. Give me things that I could possibly do on my own. I very rarely ask God for something that says, I this will completely fail if your hand is not in it. And so we miss that experience. But the truth is like, I have seen that in other people's lives though. Like, and that's where this sense of community and knowing someone that knows Jesus. And I was giving that example to one of my kids, when we were praying, and she was like, sometimes I wonder, how do I know if I love God, and how do I know God is actually there? And I said, one of the things, babe, that you're going to notice is that God will do things not only in your life or in specific people's lives just for their benefit, but it's for the benefit of their community. There's people that we know within our church family that I can look at their lives and say, God is doing something. God is up to something, and that is not only for them. God is revealing himself to his people through how he interacts with other people. It doesn't have to happen to me personally. It happens in my community, and God reveals himself that way. And so you're right. I think we're going to struggle if our expectation is to say, I need something for you to demonstrate to me specifically that I can trust you, when otherwise he uses community around us. He's used scripture to bear it. I mean, that's a basic conversation that Jesus is having with the Pharisees. I am who I say I am. Miracle proves that, right? It's never a magic trick. It's always a validation that you can trust me. I am who I say I am. This is my identity. And I think he still does that when he acts in other people's lives, and that is to be a witness to those that are around a community so they can see that those things happen. And that's, I think, where that trust is established. But I think sometimes we miss it because we simply, you can be in a great community where no one ever sees that because we got God involved in just human-sized problems. And I'm not saying God doesn't care about those, but what I'm saying is that like He's much bigger than some of the things that we ask. And we may be limiting our we're a little bit blind in that respect, because if we didn't ask for it, we're liable to chalk stuff up to coincidence or just a random happenstance. But if we're like, you're either in this or it's going to bomb, you know God shows up. And we're not testing him, but it's the thought process that says, I need you in this. I cannot accomplish this on my own. And I, to be honest with you, I think as we step out in faith in that way, I think you just tend to see it more clearly because your eyes are open to catch it. All right, maybe ponder that for me, boys. It's just something I was thinking about. And the truth is that like it's kind of an unwelcome thing at times, right? Because the easiest thing, especially when you get in a tough spot, it's easy from a high mountain to be like, this is the right way. Lose all expectation. If the person that you're praying for, you know, maybe they're sick or maybe they're away from Jesus or maybe whatever, and you're like, I expect this to happen this way, I want this to happen this way, and I'm saying you don't get to be angry with God if it doesn't happen because your expectation is wrong. And frankly, you can believe God and still be a Pharisee and miss Jesus. Like that's a hard word when you're looking at human lives. I just think it's actually where faith is. The faith in saying, like, I don't have to trust a circumstance or a set of events. I know God's character is true. Help me to see your character in this. Help me to see you in these things so that I may worship you in response to it. And the problem is that, like, I think that's hard for us because it makes God seem callous and above. But the truth is that, like, for the things that we grieve, he grieves. He's a father, right? Like, he gets those things. It's just he just has a greater perspective, and either I trust that or I don't. And you know what? I was thinking about something similar to that. When we're doing a summation of the Sermon on the Mount last Sunday, and it got me to thinking is like the reason we don't follow those some of the things that he's asking, some of these radical things, is like we can make a bunch of other excuses about where our culture is at, about whether we think it doesn't apply to us in one way or the other. But the truth is, we don't believe it. We do not believe it is the best program to be as gracious and free with our money that the Bible calls us to. We simply don't trust that that's accurate. Otherwise, you would do it. You would do it if you thought that that was the best. And we would think, well, God, just this can't apply to this circumstance. To be as crazy, gracious, and forgiving, and prayerful, or fast, or whatever these things that it calls us to. Like, even selfishly, I would do those things if I actually believed that there's no doubt about it. This is the best. But there's got to be parts of me that's holding on to certain things that says I haven't committed to that fully because I'm still not confident. And I think that's at least the honest reaction. It's not that we don't understand it. It's not that you can't really be honest and say, oh, well, I feel like that's probably just a cultural item. The truth is that when he says to give to the extent that he calls us to give, I think we frankly just don't trust it and say this is not only like a good idea and a righteousness issue. It's not the best. We just don't believe it's the best, and that's misguided. And I think we have to be honest and see those things through that filter. But it's the same thing. Do I trust God when he says? Do I trust his character? Do I trust when he says this is the thing, that's the thing? And that's the root of all faith. Do I believe? Have I taken tangible steps that show that, like, I'm actually placing my faith in God? And to be honest, if that's the rudimentary distinction that we make in our faith with Christ, think of how far a lot of times that we are from that. When our belief is a cognitive ability as opposed to, no, I trust that what you say is true and I react because it's accurate. I think there's just a greater distance between how we see belief and what the Bible is calling from a belief perspective. And I think we have to at least be honest so that we can understand where we're actually sitting, where we're actually putting our faith. All right, that's it. That's it. I pray on that, fellas. Like, if you guys are listening, just pray through that stuff. It feels and it sounds right to me. It sounds faithful to me. I've been stewing on it, and there's just a little bit of hesitancy, and maybe it's just because of what the weight of it does for what I'm not trusting or what expectations I may have set out that need to die. But anyway, pray on that, and I'll be doing it too, and we'll just see if that continues to shake out. It sniffs right to me, though. All right.
It's a hard word. Who can take it?
Who can take it? you've been listening to Live from the Path. Hey, before we get any further, I wanted to give a big thanks to our sponsors, Bob Eisenlauer with the Eisenlauer Team. Go to EisenlauerTeam.com. Hook up with Bob and the rest of the guys with the Eisenlauer Team. Now may or may not be a time to buy or sell a house. Bob knows those types of things. He is your guy. I've had an awesome experience working with him and his team. So was Mike. He comes on the show. He's real gracious with his time. And they're just all around solid people to deal with. And so I would advocate for them whether their response is here or not. I just
True.
They do solid work, and I love those guys. So hook up with the Eisenhower team. Go to EisenhowerTeam.com. Even if you don't know whether you're just kind of batting around selling your house, or you want to see what it's worth, or see what you could get out of it, or just see what's out there. Just give him a call, man. He's in that business. He knows that stuff. He can help you out. So do that. Also, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. This is for all your pet care needs. Dog, Mike, did you get your pig in there?
The lady did not get the pig in there like she was supposed to.
Oh, shoot. Shoot. I was
worried. Here's the deal, though. I did grease the pig.
What do you mean?
And it is just as hard to catch as people have envisioned.
I don't understand. Why do you actually do that?
You greased your pig?
Yeah, well, they have dry skin. And that's why they grease them. Like, you put some oil on them or whatever, try to keep their skin from drying out. But they're slick.
Okay, this sounds like a precursor to a good morning meal.
No, Eric, why do you always want to eat every animal I get? Every time I get an animal, you're like, "Hey, man,
I'm completely on board with eating that
only
pig.
Only the clean ones."
No,
I've already told you that I'm happy to eat that pig.
I don't. Here's the deal: y'all are not invited to my house no more. If every time, like you cartoon style, see a drumstick with legs walking around,
I'm sorry.
Stop looking at my animals that way.
Are you surprised by that statement? I house sitted for you 1 week. You're lucky you came back with animals.
I did have to get rid of a goat this week, though.
What?
He was getting a little offensive towards the lady. He's getting a little older, and he's starting to be a little territorial, and the woman would go down and look for some to pick up the eggs from the chickens or whatever, and this guy would get a little buddy.
Mm-hmm.
So I went down there with half a 2x4 thinking there was going to be a comeuppance, you know? It was like, I'm going to have to block him off, you know? But he stayed away from me, but I thought, man, if I can't trust him, we're going to have to get rid of him, so we had to get rid of him. But
here's the deal, man. You ever need somebody to come down and teach those goats rules, I'm happy to.
Yeah, no, yeah, where'd he go? Did you just set him out free in the yonder, or did someone pick him up? Yeah, I packed him a lunch and put him a stick and a bandana. And I said, I'm sorry, you just can't stay here anymore.
It's not working out.
It's really sad piano music going
away.
He
slowly left, looked back every once in a while. I said, no, Billy, you keep going.
It's like the end of the Hulk show.
Yeah,
walking down the road hitchhiking.
Wait, do you know his fate, though? Like, did someone buy him to eat him?
No, they're keeping him.
Oh.
Yeah. You told him he was a jerk, right?
Yeah, I purposely said, look, we're getting rid of him because we don't like the way he behaves. He's aggressive and we don't like him. And they're like, yeah, no problem. I thought, well, what goes on at your house? This is fine, you know.
They train fighting goats.
Hey, do you have an unwieldy goat that causes a bunch of trouble? I'll pay for that.
Do you have this guy's number? I got some people I can direct their way.
Here's a guy that has no expectations. You know what I'm saying? He's living the kingdom.
I'm an unruly goat.
All right. Anyway, Westfield Veterinary Hospital. Go to westfieldvethospital.com. Hey, you can even sign up for appointments online, man. You can just go on there and set that up. I know it's like 11 o'clock at night if you're listening to the live show, and you think, oh, man, I'll remember to do that tomorrow. No, you won't. You're going to forget it. You're going to pick up the dry cleaning. You're going to stop at the Hardee's, and you're going to forget all about that stuff because those cinnamon raisin biscuits will throw your mind into a tizzy. And so just set that stuff up right now, and you're going to be just fine. WestfieldVetHospital.com. Big thanks to those guys. And here's the deal. Even if you don't need to buy or sell a home, even if you don't need to take your pig into the Westfield Veterinary Hospital, I want you to, please, if you would, give those guys a call, send them an email, drop a note by their door, send them a beautiful bouquet of roses, and just say, hey, thanks for sponsoring Live from the Path. They are what allows us to be on the air. So big thanks to those guys for supporting the show in that way.
Hey, incidentally, in case you happen to be interested in sponsoring the show, get a hold of us.
Hey, man, shoot us an email, info@livefromthepath.org. Mm-hmm. If we love you, I'll tell the nations.
Yeah. I mean, here's the deal. Like, if we're being honest, like, we'll probably want to get to know you, right? Like, we like to be able to say, our sponsors are people that we know and that they put out a good product, and I think we'd love to do business with you. Yeah. So get a hold of us.
Wait, if you do good business, like if you own a sub sandwich shop and you make terrible sub sandwiches, I won't let you come on the show just because you have money.
Yeah, that and I will know.
If you make junky sub sandwiches, like I can't vouch for that.
Yeah.
We have very little integrity, but we're going to hold it on that note right there.
Exactly. Problem is, I have no taste, so I would like it.
Okay. That's why I'll be the taste tester.
Hudson can personally endorse terrible sub sandwiches.
It went down smooth.
Hank's sandwich shop. Dan's like, yeah.
Who can enjoy this? Who can enjoy this product without lying? Dan
Hudson. I didn't throw up for 3 hours. It was great.
This is a hard sandwich.
It's like take it.
Hey, man, we're going to run up on a break before we get to their story. Real quick, though, you guys seen this Charlie challenge?
Yes.
You guys seen that stuff going around the net?
Yes.
Uh-huh. This is freaking weird.
I don't know what it is.
Oh, man.
Okay, Booba, explain it for Mike.
So, apparently, from what I've seen, is people will place two pencils on top of each other in an X, and then we'll place four squares, and one says like no, and then yes, and yes. And basically, you ask Charlie, and then ask a question. Or like, are you here, basically? Or is this going to happen? And then something is supposed to happen to where the pencils that's on the top moves itself to where like a yes or a no or an answer to your question. And it's freaking a bunch of people out. Like for the people who've actually done it and have seen it move, they get freaked out and they'll make this video and they'll start screaming and then they'll run away thinking, oh no, there's a demon in my house or something like that.
Yeah, because it's at the root of it though, it's supposed to be
a Mexican demon.
Yeah, like summoning a Mexican demon.
A Mexican demon named
Charlie.
There he is, Mike. That's kind of the makeup of it.
Well, that's not the actual picture, but
yeah,
that's the picture behind it. That's what I'm saying.
Well, it adds a little creep factor to it.
It does.
I can't control the internet, Boova.
Fair enough. Maybe you can control your Here's Googling
the deal.
Habits.
If we're allowed on the internet, someone else is too.
Valid point.
Okay.
So, yeah, so you're supposed to be not – I wouldn't go as far as to say summoning this demon, but
– Well, that's what they think. That's how it's proposed, though.
Supposedly, you're summoning this demon.
I mean
Charlie, the Mexican
demon.
That's
what I'm saying. I mean, as far as demons go, like Legion is kind of a creepy name.
Exactly.
And Charlie is not.
Now, we hear about these demons that possess an entire herd of pigs and all the different stuff, and then they hear about Charlie who's going to show up and move a pencil.
That's right. I move pencils.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm the pencil demon from Mexico. How you doing? My time is almost up.
Your future says, yes.
Charlie, you here?
I feel like I have an office job now.
Yeah. If it lands on the line, does that inherently mean a maybe?
Spin again.
Yeah. It turns into an 8-ball. Yeah,
exactly. They used to sell demons called 8-balls, too, now.
So the concept is there's all these people, and it's all the rage where people are freaking out, saying, you know, Charlie's here, craziness, oh my gosh, I can't believe it, and then go running out of their house or running out of the room and stuff like that. And then... if you want to laugh, go find all the parody videos of it. It's actually really fun.
Have you? I mean, think about this. If you balance one pencil on top of another and then breathe at least mildly heavily,
it might move.
It will move.
Yeah. I was going to say, there's a demon by my heating vent because I can make a Kleenex move when I put in front of it.
Put a little boogie in it.
Really? Hell. Did you just tell the end of a joke and not the beginning? Yeah. To get to the other side.
anyway, I hadn't heard, like, I heard somebody mention it.
Oh,
and I thought it was a band. I thought it was like an 80s
Charlie.
Duran.
Like
Duran.
Mr.
That's cool.
I thought certainly this is like an 80s retro band.
Mr. broke up and then became Charlie. But reconvened with an actual first name.
Here's the only thing I would say about this, though. Is like, do I think that's what's happening? No. Do you need to be jacking with that?
No.
There's absolutely no reason to be sniffing around at stuff. Just like you want to take a peeksie of some binoculars into that Ouija board. Here's the deal. Like, that stuff is truer than you realize. Whether this is a medium through which it happens or not, I'm gonna doubt. But listen, the curiosity is going to be a problem in this area. You just don't need to be jacking with that stuff. Okay?
Yep.
There's things to leave on the net. That's one of them. Yeah. Let it go.
If you want to get into the spiritual realm, come talk to us. I know a guy, and Jesus is pretty awesome and seems to run that area. And so let's just get right to the top. We'll skip all this. Some low-level Mexican paper demon.
Yeah, you're looking for like a Jorge Bar Jesus.
Right, exactly.
It's not necessary.
How much of a lack of discernment do you have in your life? You're like, you know, man, I really need to start making better decisions. You know, I really think that I saw this on the internet once, that I should be putting a pencil on top of another pencil and then asking some Mexican demon named Charlie to give me yes or no's.
Why did he move to Mexico? He has such like a New Jersey name.
It is not apples to apples, right? Hey, can you take away my sin and give me your righteousness? Yes. Can you move a pencil?
It's like God sitting back like, man, created everything. It's like, hey, you know those pencils he moved? I built it.
You know, and sometimes I just see God, and like this is terrible, a characterization of all the sovereign Lord, but like with a facepalm going, I offer you everything.
And that is the most epic
and
face
you have wide-ruled paper just and pencils.
Actually, maybe that's a new description. You always tell kids, like, there's angels bowling or whatever. Like, thunder is actually the face palm of God.
He's face
like,
palm.
What? Like, come on, Charlie.
The hand that can hold the Pleiades in the span of just jokes.
Yep.
Pencils and paper.
World's largest...
You guys are so stupid. Seriously.
Hey man, I need advice in my life. Well, I heard there's a Mexican demon you can talk to. Oh, it's really creepy?
It's
perfect.
Not even like it's not even written in Spanish, you know what I'm saying? Like it's English, yes and no.
Exactly.
Yeah,
Jose, me. Jose, are you here?
I don't know why he's living in Mexico. Like, of all the places.
It's because where he was originally from, they made fun of him because all he could do was move pencils. So he moved his way down to Mexico. And they were like, they're going to love me down there. It's going to be great.
All right. You're listening to Live from the Path. All right. Here's the deal. If you're listening.
Put
you
a little boogie in it.
The devil invented the internet. I'm telling you.
He did.
I don't care what people say. We can redeem it.
No.
No, you can't.
Hey, man.
It can be for good.
Nope.
We're on the internet.
I was going to say. Hey.
What am I saying?
All right, you're listening to Life from the Path. Hopefully, not on the internet, I guess. If you're listening on
the radio, is blessed by Jesus. The internet, definitely.
Only AM.
AM only, yeah.
Only AM.
Not the FM.
FM cannot be redeemed either.
You're listening to a very shifty truth network, 99.3 FM. Thanks for hanging out with us. Hey, if you're on the podcast, hang tight. We got some more stuff to talk about. Big thanks to our sponsors, Bob Eisner with the Eisenhower team and Westfield Veterinary Hospital. If you want to find us during the week, go to livefromthepath.org. And here's the deal. More than ever, be faithful in the means. God will handle the ends. Thanks for listening to Live from the Path. Well, it's too late. All right. Yeah, no, I forgot. I was supposed to. Well, I said if you're listening to the podcast, you're right. I say that every week, man.
We do, but we don't.
People don't realize we
do. Maybe
we
need to give it more.
I can't keep up with the podcast.
Hey, if you're on the podcast, realize we have a podcast. If you didn't know while listening to the podcast,
it's on the internet, though.
Here's the deal. We're gonna let you in on a little bit of business here at the Life from the Path. We need more people to listen to the show.
We really do.
I mean, I'm having a hard time looking my wife in the eye anymore.
No, actually, I was I was doing some stuff this weekend, and I met a guy, and he recognized my voice, and it turns out he listens to the show, and I will be dead honest, I was flabbergasted.
That's not a good sign. I thought, humility incarnate.
I thought, I cannot.
Was it Pete?
No, it wasn't even Pete.
Hey, Pete. It wasn't the one known user of the show that we know.
No, it was a legit human man. That was in front of me, and that he listens to the program, and I really had no idea.
Was it Charlie? Did you ask Charlie if he listens to the show?
All I had was a Bic.
If I only have one pencil, can I take
it? It didn't work out. All right, let's see. What else? Mike, you got some Dear Life from the Path?
I do. You ready?
Yep.
Dear Life from the Path, I've been married to my husband a little over a year. He's a wonderful man. But I feel he's a little too attached to his mother. She lives about 20 minutes away, and he wants to go visit her almost every day. His mother's a very negative person. She isn't mean, and we get along well, but her negativity is overwhelming. She finds joy in practically nothing, and I always leave feeling agitated. I have talked with my husband about this before, and his response is, "That's how some old people are." I could put up with it a few times a week, but this everyday thing is wearing on me. How can I get my husband to understand how I'm feeling without hurting his mother's feelings? No joy.
Hey, that mama's boy is a phrase that stuck around for a reason. That stuff's hard to shake, I think.
I mean, can you legit visit your mom every day after you're married to a man? I mean, unless she's in your care because there's, you know, physically unable to do stuff or something.
Apparently you can if she lives 20 minutes away.
20 minutes is not right around the corner.
Yeah, like next door would have been.
I mean, my mom's been like 10 minutes away from me, said meet me at the gas station. Like, I don't know, Ma. I got some stuff brewing.
I mean, even if you're not married.
Pizza's in the oven.
What kind of adult every day?
I mean, every day?
Hey, Mom. Just thought I'd stop by.
I feel like,
I mean, what, once in a while, often. Babe,
I feel like I kind of want to give some advice to his mom. It's just like, hey, Ma, I get that you love your son. Like, that's great, but he's got a wife now, and he needs to be there all the time rather than coming. Because I doubt it's a 20-minute drive and then a 5-minute conversation.
Well, I mean, and the wife does not have to go with him. You know what I'm saying? But like, no, listen, but I'm not going to visit your mom every day.
How does she not notice this when they were dating?
Yeah, it's not like this just happened.
Yeah. Which, you know, that's too late. It's too bad. Sorry. Should have been paying him more attention. But, wow. I'd even say he needs to grow up, but I'm thinking, I don't know if he ever will. That's who he is.
Well, we're giving up on him, Dad.
Now, I feel bad. I feel bad, but I've given up on him.
It doesn't sound like this gal has had, having a little bit of issue even saying this, having the right conversation with the guy. It seems like she's had the conversation of, she's negative, I don't want to go over there
right,
anymore.
Okay, yeah. Is and the then problem he says, that he's visiting all the time or that she's a negative?
No, I think the problem is that he's visiting all the time because that's her first comment.
Yeah.
We go over there every single day. He's a bit of a mama's boy. I think that the wife needs to have a conversation with her husband and say, hey, you know, Gerald, whatever his name is, you know, I love you, and I'm glad that we're in this relationship together.
Why does he sound like he runs a hooch parlor? Well, can't he have a regular man's name?
Because the only other name came was Charlie, and I didn't want to use that one. So Gerald it was.
Gerald.
It sounds like this guy needs to have, or the gal needs to have a conversation with her husband saying, you know, yeah. I get we've talked about this from the perspective of your mom's a negative Nancy, but really more from the perspective of, you know, we're in a relationship now, and we need to be spending time together, and I don't see the point of going over there every single day. I would like for us to spend time together at home and not go there every day.
Here's the thing, though. I think Dan's nailed it, right? Because that conversation's not going to go well.
It's
you know,
not,
the guy's going to say, look, there's no reason. I'm visiting my mom. There's no reason that I shouldn't be able to have a relationship with my mom. You're being too needy and clingy. Like, I can hear this guy coming from 6 miles away.
Okay. But what else can we do?
Hold on. Here's how you put it. You say, Gerald, is it? You say,
yeah, Gerald.
You stick with me on this. You say, Gerald, if you and your mom were both naked in the living room, would you feel no shame? And he would say, no, that would be awkward. And I would say, that's correct. The Bible says you and your wife are to be naked and feel no shame. Go home. That's how I would handle that.
That's way less awkward than the other way that
I was going to say.
Hey, this is how you solve problems.
You confront them awkwardly in the room and see what comes out.
Yeah, confront them awkwardly in a way that's not actually going to affect this guy.
No. The man leaves his father and mother and is united to his wife, and they become one flesh. And they're naked and feel no shame.
Does that Mama's Boy sound like that? That like he's going to be affected very well by that
statement? I'm not. You know, at first I was overly disgusted by Ben's tactic, but actually I feel like that might actually be effective. Like, here's the deal: because like a guy like that is not putting his marriage in perspective.
That's what I'm saying.
He's not looking at his life correctly. And so, I mean, maybe that's not the exact best way.
This
to do
is the
it,
right way to handle.
But you need. He's got to have some way to change his perspective on the way that he's viewed. And frankly, I mean, they've been married just over a year. The first year is a lot of you figuring out how to be with somebody. If you're trying to do this in the long term, then you start. I mean, every nook and cranny ends up getting gone through, and there's a lot of awkward, and there's a lot of figuring out how you guys are going to handle X and this and whatever. And she probably should have seen this coming. I think Dan's probably right about that. But like, you know, you're right. I think she's deflecting to the mom is negative. The mom, it could be negative. Whatever. She can do whatever she wants. She lives over there. You know, she lives at her own place. But, your conversations with your husband and how often he's visiting opposed to how this woman behaves.
I've already laid down the gauntlet.
Secular says, you and your husband are married, not joined at the hip. If he wants to see his mother every day, that's fine. But you should not be obligated to go with him more than a couple times a week if you don't want to. If he feels he needs to give her an explanation for your absence, he should tell her you are busy with things you need to do. It's polite, it's logical, and I'm sure you will find errands or tasks of which to fill the time.
It's polite, it's logical, and it's a blatant lie to your mother.
Absolutely. Woo-hoo. And I'm sure the negative lady is going to go, oh yeah, that sounds right.
Oh yeah, that sounds right.
This sounds like an
ugly. You should have never married her.
That's bad advice.
Yeah, the whole thing, this is a husband and wife conversation. The mother has absolutely nothing to do with
David
it.
David Harrod looks worried. What's the deal, Harrod?
Well, I'm just imagining in her absence, negative Nancy's, you know, not going to have a lot of kind words to say about her.
Yeah.
Hey, why is she not visiting? You know, and
I mean, do you have to visit just to be able to defend yourself in the first person?
I don't know. It's just the guy, he's lost sight of where boundaries are supposed to be. And,
yeah.
And it's like there's supposed to be a fence around the house he's establishing, not the house he came from. And he's lost that.
Yeah.
That's so he's basically a little boy still.
So. Yeah. That's what Ben tried to say, and you guys seemed astonished.
Well, just because I wasn't really down with the, hey, can you get naked with your mama conversation? Because that's just weird to have with anybody.
Hey, that was the point. The man obviously can't be shaken from his way of living. You're going to have to say something that rattles him up a bit.
Here's the deal. I'm doubling down on Ben's idea. I don't think it's that bad. Here we go. Dear Life from the Path. My boyfriend has been meeting a group of diving friends in New Mexico for more than 15 years.
Yikes.
We are now a couple, and this was... I don't think they've been dating for 15 years.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah, that's what I read.
That was my first thought, too. Yeah.
Okay, so my boyfriend has been meeting a group of diving friends in Mexico for more than 15 years.
Yeah.
We are now a couple, and this is my first year meeting everyone. There were two other couples and one female, parentheses Connie, sharing the condo. The other couples had private bathrooms, and we shared the main bathroom with Connie. I found it odd that Connie would leave the bathroom after showering with only a towel wrapped around her. My boyfriend would stay in the room or go out to the deck and read, yet she didn't hesitate to walk out to the patio and converse with him. Is this socially acceptable, or is it me? What can I say to her next year? I thought about buying her a bathrobe and giving it to her. I have also considered that my boyfriend and I could get a private room and stay there until we know she's dressed. Really, she needs the private room, and I thought about paying for it, or should something just politely be said? What
so,
do you do
so,
with...
So she thinks the other woman's more attractive than her.
You think that's the deal?
I think it is.
Otherwise, she wouldn't care. If it was 85-year-old Ethel rolling around in her skivvies, you'd go, eh. Some old people are just like that.
Yeah, Dan's got a good point. I don't think it would be a problem if it was an 85-year-old woman. If she was walking out with a... I mean, it'd be uncomfortable, but...
to feel no shame.
Feel no shame.
This is a hard scene. Can anyone take it?
Well, whatever I had, John.
I love the Bible.
And the phrase of the night is...
So... I mean, here's the deal. Like, this isn't on the woman, right? Like, I feel like it's on the dude.
Yeah,
he went out to the deck to read, and she followed him out.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously the relationship between these folks up to this point has seemed to permit this level, whether it should have or not.
Sure.
But I think out of respect for who it is that you are dating and otherwise pursuing a life with, that has to stop.
Well, and actually, if you feel like that conversation is not going to go well with your boyfriend, I hate to say this, but you just might want to see with the choice that you've made, right? Like, I feel like my wife should be able to come up to me and say, even, let's say I've been going 15 years and I know this gal real well, and the towel thing is just not a deal. I mean, you've probably been in a two-piece bathing suit for 15 years diving,
yeah.
You know? But, like, if she says, look, it makes me uncomfortable, and it makes me feel... I just don't like it. And, like, really, any more explanation is not necessary. I'd say, okay, mm-hmm. I understand. Yeah. I'll do my best to see if we can get this thing curbed, and if my efforts don't get it done, then I'll talk to her about it.
Yeah.
I feel like that's not out of expectations from a girlfriend. But then on the other hand, if you think that conversation is going to go poorly or you're afraid to have it, you might want to consider your choice in fellas.
It is interesting to think, though, that like a lady covered up with a towel is probably more than a bikini would.
A lot more.
If you're dealing with surfing folks. Mm-hmm. I mean, just relatively speaking, to the extent that like you want to kind of get into the areas there, I don't know, it doesn't seem like it's a significantly different item.
Yeah, it's like she's naked under that towel. She's naked under the swimsuit, too.
Yeah, I'm naked under what I got on.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, man, surprise. That's disgusting.
Hey, man. Mike, we ever had this? I had one of my kids show up last night and goes, I got 3 pairs of underpants on. I said, classic, why are you doing that? I don't know, just want to see what it's about. I said, okay. Kid slept in 3 pairs of undies.
I love that.
And then Amanda goes, my wife goes, hey, we can't keep doing that. I don't have to wash all those undies. I said, only the bottom was dirty. I said, she got 2 pairs of fresh undies ready to go. It's going to be fine. Anyway, just something to think about.
I like what she's done. I feel like that's solid thinking. Secular's advice is, before doing anything, stop and analyze why you are so bothered by what Connie is doing. Do you think she is coming on to your boyfriend? Remember, these are all diving friends who have gotten together for a very long time before you were in the picture. If he was interested in her, which I doubt, he wouldn't be with you. I do not think paying for another room for Connie would be appropriate. I do think you should get to know her better, and if you still feel threatened, which you may not, talk to your boyfriend about your feelings.
Actually, that's the right advice, too. I agree with that. The more you know Connie, Connie may stop doing that simply out of respect for you as she starts to know you better and think through your eyes a little bit. Maybe she just stops doing that.
You want to do one more?
Yeah, let's do one.
Man, this one's off the chain.
Okay.
Dear Life from the Path, I'm a teenager, and I want to grow up fast. My boyfriend, Jared, and I are very serious, and we want to have a baby. I know that sounds crazy, but we talk about it all the time, and we're ready for it. Well, I bet Jared's ready for it. As much as I want all this, I'm afraid I won't be able to provide for the baby. A solid thing to worry about. I've been distant from Jared because I don't know how to tell him I'm not totally sure. He'll be disappointed after all we've discussed. I need to know what to do and say. I need answers. That's it.
Welcome to grown-up world.
Break up with Jared. Walk away from this guy. If he's a teenager and he's willing to say to himself, yeah, I'm ready to have a kid, the guy has bad judgment.
Well, it's okay. Now, here's the deal. She was there, too, right?
Yeah.
Okay, so
again, bad judgment.
Bad judgment on both parts.
Understanding, right? But with what she's asking, though, my guess is that your advice is going to fall on deaf ears. So my question is not that it's not the right advice, but do you feel like there's a way that you could, there's a different way to talk about that that helps her understand where that's coming
your
from?
Your question is, how do you speak to two fools?
That's basically my question, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I want to know, are they already sexually active and they're just going to stop using contraceptives, or are they talking about...
Man, Dan brought the real in the room.
Wow, hello.
Here's a little reality for you. Are you using contraceptives?
Are you just going to lose a hat or what?
Yeah.
I don't understand what
it matters,
though.
I thought they just wanted to adopt together. What do you mean?
Yeah, wait a minute. When did sex become involved in this situation?
Ew, they're teenagers.
You creeps, come on. Kids don't do that.
You're like a guidance counselor, Dan, I swear. Like, these guys are talking about, like, having a baby and blah, blah, blah. And Dan's like, are you having sexual intercourse? Have you been intimate with each other?
Dan's that weird hospital survey. Have you had sexual intercourse within the last 6 months? If so, and then it's like, oh, man, that's creepy.
All right. Wait. There's got to be a reason that matters. Go ahead, Dan. What does that matter?
I think it's just part of the conversation. I mean, I just want to know.
I'm just interested.
Charlie Gossip.
Have they been having sex? Material.
Filling out the chart. These are just things I need to know.
I mean, at what level of poor judgment are they at?
Well, okay.
How do you help them?
Maybe Dan makes a solid point, right? Like, let's say that they are. Would that give you enough leverage to say, look, I'm not real sure that you have a relationship with Jesus here or have a foundation of kingdom living. So, like, you want to fight the peripherals? Like, you want to swing at the clouds here, or you want to go for where the heart of the matter is? Why do you want to grow up so fast anyway? You know what? Like, what's going on in your life? We need to talk and see what's happening here.
And maybe that's what I'm getting at, Boob. Is like, it's not that it's. I think that's the right output, but the question is like, why? Like, help her understand that, because I think her perspective may not be meeting up with the background of where you're coming from.
Yeah, I'm not saying kids ain't a blessing, but I don't think you understand the full package of blessings when people say blessing. It's like at the end of the night after they finally got to bed, and you go, "I'm blessed." But at like 10:30 that morning, you're like, I don't know.
I mean,
I don't feel as blessed as I did last night.
The truth is like, if having a child when you know very well that you are not in a position to take care of it isn't growing up, right? It's just being a child with a child,
right?
Mm-hmm. And so, like, the right thing is like, if you want to grow up, let me help you understand what that looks like. Here's what growing up looks like, and I can encourage you in that, because I mean, if they want to grow up, they're 16 and they want to take on responsibility and get work and move on in education.
Get
fine,
crap.
Thumbs up. I love it. That's what growing up looks like. Having a child does not make you an adult. And there's tons of examples you could give, either worldly or probably closer to them, of where they would be able to see that. And so, like, that's really where the misconception is that, like, they found something they desired and they look at the child as the way to get there. And it's mistaken.
Yeah,
so it's foolishness. Yes,
circumstances are not what make you an adult. It's the actions and the heart you have.
Right, and so the truth is, actually, you know what I probably would say is, like, this realization that you're having right now to kind of put the skids on this thing, that's adult thinking. Like, that's demonstrating that you're looking to be an adult, because you're weighing and saying, we don't have the ability to take care of this child. It would be irresponsible to bring them into the world, regardless of what we've talked about or our feelings on the matter. That is adult level thinking. Congratulations. You need to continue that process. And you can't go back into acting in childish ways simply to accommodate another child who's not thinking in that same way. Mm-hmm. So I think maybe it's trying to say similar to what you're saying. I just, like, connect with what it is that they're actually say that they're trying to do, recognize some fallibility, and maybe I don't know. I think you can encourage her, because I think it is an adult thing that she's thinking through.
Then my base level is, I'm going to introduce her to Christ. That's the basic situation.
Here's a guy I trust. Here's the way he says to roll.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, let me explain to
this
you.
This is a hard saying.
Yeah, this is a hard saying.
Who can bear it?
Only guidance counselors can bear it.
Yeah, so breaking it down to, okay, so let's talk a little bit about motives behind this, and let's talk about your heart and see where that's at. And here's Jesus, and here's his perspective on adulthood and on what it's like to be a parent and what the responsibilities are and where you should be at, what your responsibilities are.
Okay, Secular says, you and Jared may be intent on growing up fast, but believe me, having a child at your age is a guaranteed way to slow you down. Once a baby is here, the baby's needs will supersede yours until he or she is no longer a minor. You are wise to worry about how you will provide for any baby you bring into this world, and Jared should be doing the same thing. If you make it out of high school, many pregnant girls don't, the kind of jobs you'll be prepared for won't pay much. If Jared suddenly discovers he isn't up to the responsibilities of fatherhood, and believe me, it has happened many times, you'll have greater problems than telling your boyfriend you don't think you're ready to be a mother until you have at least a high school diploma. Here's the deal. I think while I agree with most of what she said, she's fighting the clouds. I mean, it is what it is. I feel the same way with a lot of people I know that have some serious problems that are destroying their life, right? But like, I feel like piecemealing some of that stuff is not, it's not the way to go. Like, you go for the heart of the matter, and you go for the core of what brings your decisions to what they are now. Otherwise, they'll just find a new brand of vodka to use to drown themselves in. It's just the way that it works. And so,
yep. Take one thing, they'll grab another.
So, you've been listening to Live from the Path. Thanks for hanging out with us here. Again, you can catch us during the week at livefromthepath.org. And, you can follow us on Twitter and catch us on Facebook. I'd recommend the Twitter over the Facebook, to be honest. It allows us to actually get in touch with you in a much more direct and distinct manner. So we appreciate that. Thanks for hanging out with the podcast. Hey, share with your friends. Let people know that Live from the Path is out there talking about the Charlie. I feel like that goes viral. Things of this nature. All right, I love you guys. Hey, be faithful to means. God will most certainly.
I don't know you very well. I won't say that I love you, but I'm glad to have that Ben likes you.
I love some of you. How's that?
Yeah.
What's wrong with saying I love all of them?
That's probably not accurate.
No.
In fact, we have a couple of very suspicious Twitter followers. All right, you've been listening live. Have a good week. Thanks for listening live from the past.